Today is June 25th, 1984. I am Dawn Salvato, and I am interviewing Fred Panizak at YMCA. May I ask your name?
Fred Panizak.
What is your age?
66.
Could you tell me a little bit about your family?
Well, my mother and father came over from Poland in 1908, and settled in the Black Rock, and they went over to Bridgeport, and we lived in Bridgeport until they both passed away, and the children got married, and we all moved to different areas, and that's it.
How many people were in your family?
Well, there was seven altogether, and I had one brother that died early, and so there are six of us left, and thank God we're still living.
Were you brought up in a close-knit family?
Yes, we were very closely knit. We believed in the religion, we believed in closeness of family and love amongst each other and helping each other. And at that time, especially during the depression there, it was quite hard to get along, but we managed to, and we all cooperated with each other.
Did your parents come here for reasons of employment? Or?
That I never have found out, to be honest with you. All I know is they both came here, and why they came, I imagine it was to better themselves, but as to truthfully or not, I couldn't tell you.
What grammar school did you attend?
I went to St. Michael's Parochial School.
What high school did you attend?
Harding High.
Did you go to college?
No, I did not. I went to the service instead.
Okay. When you were in school, did you go to dances or plays?
Well, when I was in school, I went out for athletics quite a bit. I went out for the cross-country team, the track team. I went to a few dances during the evenings that they might have, or the afternoon classes also, but I never went in for that too much at that particular time, no.
What kind of subjects did you take?
I took English, geometry, French, and algebra, of course, and history.
Do you know anything about World War I and World War II?
World War I, I don't remember too much of because I was born just almost at the very end of it, 1918. But World War II I participated in, so that I know a little bit about.
Could you tell me about it?
Well, war was declared in December 7, 1941. I enlisted in April 1942. Enlisted in the Marine Corps. Went down to Parris Island, South Carolina. Then up to Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, and from there we were transferred over to the West Coast. From there we took a ship over Samoa, and we stayed there for a month, and then we went to Guadalcanal and helped the troops over there during the attack from the Japanese on there.
When did you come back to Bridgeport?
I came back at the end of the war, 1946, in April the 7th.
Could you tell me a little about the Depression, maybe?
Well, during the Depression time, my recollections are the fact that we were running around with holes in our shoes, mostly, and we're going down to the coal yards, picking up coal to bring home to heat the stove during the winter time, and everything was just plain poor. There was nothing, no work, no money, no nothing.
Could you tell me a little bit about the neighborhood you lived in?
I lived in that time over on Nicholas Street in the east side of Bridgeport. It was the whole east side of Bridgeport was more or less a conglomerate of different religions as well as different nationalities, different races. And we all managed to get along pretty well at that particular time. And it was a very run-down neighborhood, but very well taken care of at the same time by the people who lived in it. The east side, I lived in a tenement house, about 24 families, which is torn down now for the true what they made. And he had a backyard about 100 yards long, I guess, and all the children played in the backyard. And right across from us was a manufacturing place, the Ashcroft Company, which was called Manning & Maxwell & Moore after that. That it was called Dresser Industries when they moved to Stratford. On the other side, there was the Metropolitan Body Shop, Frisbee Pie Company up further down the street, and there's also the State Trade School up on the corner of Pulaski and at that time was called Sterling Street, not Pulaski Street. And right across from them was a school I went to, which was St. Michael's. And anything else I can help? We used to watch people working in Ashcroft. Then when we come back and forth from school, we look in through the open grated windows there and looked in and watched the people work there, and that was it.
What church did you go to?
St. Michael's National.
What kind of activities did your church have for the young people?
Well, for the young people at that time, actually, there weren't any activities, anything. All they had going on in the school, they did have sports to a certain extent. You had recreation in the parking lots out there. But the sports, they did form St. Michael's baseball teams that they played on, and different in the Holy Name League, Junior Holy Name, seen that like that. But as far as sports itself is concerned, no. They didn't have any as far as that's concerned, just the baseball team.
Did you go to Beardsley Park, Seaside, dances?
Oh, I went through all those places. Seaside Park used to go down quite a bit in the summertime, just lay on the beach there. It was beautiful. And it was usually laid right around the in front of the beach house up there, which they used to have dances up in the beach pavilion up there. And Beardsley Park, you used to go down there quite a bit, walk down there from where we lived on Nicholas Street, and went down there, we played ball, we played horseshoes, and just strolled to the park. Beautiful, swimming out there on the reservoir. And the other park, what was that?
Beardsley Seaside, or just the dances, maybe?
Oh, and dances. We went to, at that time I was a little too young to participate in the dancing, I was still going to school. But after I got out of school, I went to quite a few dances, and I used to teach dancing for a while, too.
Could you tell me about the sports they had in Bridgeport?
The sports, they had quite a bit of activity as far as sports concerned. They used to have the junior leagues, junior city leagues, senior city leagues, and they had sports from all the different organizations going on in the city of Bridgeport. They would have all the schools participate, all the churches, and a lot of also Sandlot baseball was being played down the Seaside Park and Beardsley Park. And you have quite a few teams going on like that. There was always something to go into, and they used to play down the waterfront over in the West End down there. And used to play baseball out there, football. Football was played down in Seaside Park. Football is also played up in the Beardsley Park. And the other kind of sports that they participated in, they had some odd soccer going on. They had ice skating and sled riding over in Beardsley Park. You slide down a big hill over there where they got the zoo now. You slide right down the hill into the pond over there, the reservoir when it froze over. And the same thing down in Seaside Park.
Were there any sports for women in Bridgeport?
Now, going back to my early years, there were none as such. As I started to go to work and all, they did start participating in sports as far as the factories were concerned. The Brian Letick used to have a softball team for girls. Ray Best's Breakettes started up at that time. And there was quite a few sports, mostly in the softball. Not too much in anything else at that particular time. Bowling, yes, there wasn't bowling also, I'm sorry. And that's it.
Did they have sports in school? In schools for women, or just in the
School, not participation for girls. It was only more or less just gym activities, and that was it.
All right. Could you tell me anything else? Could you tell me anything about maybe the circus, for instance, by the valley?
Well, the circus, when I was very young, we used to see the circus down at Seaside Park and down in Wentfield down there, and Barnum and Bailey used to have their camp over there. And you see carnivals all over the city. Carnivals were over on the foot of Honey Spot Road and Stratford Avenue. There used to be a carnival over there. And we used to have a lot of those, all kinds of carnivals and parades we used to go through all the time. There used to be parades along from starting at Bull's Head in Bridgeport, going up to down Main Street, up to Fairfield Avenue, State Street, up to Park Avenue, then down to the park, Seaside Park, and where they would disband after activities at the different monuments, and putting wreaths over there for the statues and things like that.
Could you tell me, after you got out of the service, what you did?
Well, when I got out of the service, I went back to, well, for the first 2 months, I didn't go to work.
Al Furbish, please inform to the membership that Al Furbish.
I didn't go back to work immediately. I went down to Arthur Murray School and tried out for a dance instructor, succeeded in making it, taught dancing off and on, either for them or myself at the time, for about 2 years. And after that, I recall the fact that you go back and see, my wife got pregnant, of course, we had a child. I had gotten married in the meantime. And we had a child, and then at that time they were going to give you your seniority counted during the time you were in the service. So adding the time I had put into the Ryan Electric before then, plus the time in the service, gave me an incentive at that particular time to go back to work, to have a more definite means of support for the wife and the children. And stayed there until for about 26 years. After that, I left there and went to work over in Stratford for Sikorsky's, and spent the next 20 years there until I retired.
Could you tell me a little bit about what it was like?
Well, as far as what work is concerned, well, I was in plastics all my life. I was plastics and Brian Electric. We did some hand molding, compression molding, air molding, injection molding, and when I went to Sikorsky, I did the same thing, as only different type of molding. We were still in plastics. This was laying down fiberglass cloth, cooking them in an oven, and that's the only kind of molding, or only kind of work, more or less. I did work myself up to lead man, was offered a job as a foreman, refusing, and then time came to retire. I just retired.
Well, is there anything, any events that maybe happened in Bridgeport that stand out in memory?
Well, if you're talking about events, you're talking about things that stuck out in your mind. Yes, one time when I lived on Nicholas Street there, I used to walk back and forth to St. Michael's School down the road about five blocks away, and a lot of the children at that time had nothing to do with it. They'd try to get home fast, they would jump on the back of a bus or a horse-drawn cart, and one time a fellow fell off and got run over by a bus, and used to go around. I used to take a ride once in a while, even though I was quite only about 8, 9 years old at the time. Used to be this laundry man, used to take me up to Myrtle Beach in Milford to help him just for the ride, and to sort the laundry out in a truck for him. And that stuck in my mind. That's how I got to know a little about Milford, where I eventually ended up living. Bridgeport, the east side, is my particular type of apple, you might call it, because I loved it. I was born there, I was raised there, and it was a beautiful place to live in, well taken care of by the people who lived there, even though it was a conglomeration of races and creeds, but still everybody got together very well. There was no animosity, no fighting. You would be able to sleep at night with your window or door open. Nobody wouldn't be afraid of anybody coming in. The stores would be down the street. They had no grates on the window, not like it is today. It's just about more or less broke my heart when I went through it a few years back and saw what a mess they had made out of the whole east side there, because the buildings are half gone, places are burnt out, they got bars on the windows of the stores, and it's such a shame. And then drugs, and the Father Panic Village is another example. It was a beautiful place at one time when it was first built. It was well taken care of by the people who lived there. They had little gardens growing on the side, they had the windows and curtains on the windows. Everything looked frilly and nice. Matter of fact, you used to play ball right behind there over in the next to the silver factory over there. And everything was just beautiful at the time. And there again, like I say, coming back to it now and looking at it and seeing the Father Panic Village, where there's so much, what I read in the papers, there are people leaving the police and their firemen afraid to go in there now because of being pelted by rocks and everything else. And seeing it now and compare it to then, you just wonder what the reason for it, or why the difference in people's way of behavior, you might call it, as to how they took care of the property they were given to entrust, more or less, to look after. And instead of looking after to the best of their ability, it seemed as though it was just torn down. And then they were asking for more help. And instead of, and if they were given more help, they tore that down. It's a pet peeve of mine, more or less, which I can't dwell on too much, because then they'll say I'm prejudiced or not, which I really am not, because I was born, we had blacks living at the time I was a child there, playing with the same people in the neighborhood over there. Used to be able to walk down Stratford Avenue. They had movies down Stratford Avenue, movies down East Main Street, movies down on Main Street, further down the street, movies all over the place. And every place you went to, you weren't afraid to walk. You'd go in the movies all over. And today they're all gone. They're all razed. The neighborhoods look like they've been torn down and dilapidated. And I can't honestly say it's the city. I can't, because I think a person makes a place what they are themselves. If they have any pride in themselves in the neighborhood, they'll take care of it. If they don't have any pride, they'll let it go to pieces, or even help to tear it to pieces and then blame somebody else. So I know, like I say, one time there used to, we were kids, we had a lot of fun, we were able to go any place in a city, more or less, and there'd be no harm done to any of us. And used to be able to go down Water Street. Used to be a place called Ebbets Lane, and in the back of that there was an Acorn Boys Club, or Acorn Club rather, where they used to have fighters, and some of the best fighters came out of there, like Pinky Morris came out of there. Went over to the Orchid Boys Club, where I spent a lot of my time during the age of 11 and 12, and on Middle Street Boys Club. But everybody seemed to get along well. They all mingled, they all cooperated. And you never had any trouble that you would have as far as shootings or like that was concerned. There might have been, I'm not saying, I can't say, but they weren't, let's say they weren't known, they weren't publicized to that extent. It might be that the media today is bringing it out too much, I don't know. But whatever it is, it's a crying shame, because people basically are what they are brought up to be, and I lay a lot of that to the parents themselves. Because if the parent brings up a child and spends the time in love with them, that child will grow up to respect other people's wishes and also realize that they should be dealt correctly with. But if the child is left on his own, because the families are too preoccupied by themselves, or like since the Second World War, where they had to go out and make a living because of the people working during the war, and they got used to materialistic things in life, where they wanted more money, so the first thing you know, they spent more time on money and inconsequential things rather than on their own children. And the people who felt they had that other people owed them something, that was their cry. You owe me something, so I'm entitled to it, so you should give it to me. And instead of bringing the children up to try to get ahead, they instilled that into their children, that when they grow up in turn, they felt they were owed something. And nobody's owed anything. You are what you are inside. You can become anything you want if you bother to stop and think and strive for something. If you have no goal, then you're not going to get anywhere. But if you strive for anything, I don't care if you come in there. To me, there's no such thing as a ghetto. A ghetto is there because you made it a ghetto, not because of the fact that it's there, it became that way by itself. People themselves make a ghetto. I can't call any place a ghetto. Look back to the origin of that and you'll find out that the ghetto was made up through the succession of years because of the condition and the people put the condition in that place themselves. That's what makes it that way. And it bothers me because, like I say, I used to be awfully proud of Bridgeport, being born and bred there more or less. And when I see it today, it's it tears my heart. And it's not only one side, it's not only the east side, it's not only the south end. You got one of the nicest shopping places in Bridgeport there. If it was built, it was intended to be that way. It was Lafayette Shopping Center when it was first made. But then your environment around the across the railroad tracks came over there, and people were afraid to go shopping because they were afraid of being ripped off. They were afraid of cars being broken into while they're shopping. What makes it like that? Like I say, it's who knows? I still say it's on account of the people themselves who are being brought up. The children, they're brought up the right ideals and the right thoughts and the right words and shown a little bit of love and guidance by the parents, they'll be all right. Otherwise, there's no hope for them now or ever. Today, a lot of the children don't have any hope, I guess, for the future, because they say we'll get hit by a nuclear bomb and that'll be the end of that. But you got to realize you don't look at things that way, because the Lord made you what you are. There's a future, whether it's in this life or another life. what the Lord makes you is what he intends you to be. If you just lay back and don't believe in God or anything, then you're asking for the other alternative, hell. And you'll end up there. And you can say, well, Lord, I was brought up this way, or I had no religion, or I had this and that. No, you don't have to have religion to believe there's a supreme being. How else did you get here? How else did the first person ever got here? There is a supreme being, otherwise nobody would be here. So if you go along and believing in something, regardless of what it is, but believing that there is somebody at the head of all this, you're going to have to account to him sooner or later for what you were put here on earth to make use of. You're given the body. You bring that body back to him in as good a condition you can. Whether it's fat, whether it's thin, whether it's anything else, well, that's what you make out of it. That's not going to condemn you, but that's what you make out of it. But you have to live up to the ideal. So you go, Lord, I did the best I did with what you gave me. It's up to you to judge me if I did right. If you didn't judge me, if I did wrong, I deserve to be punished. Whether it's going to hell or whether it's going to in between or whether it's going to heaven, then that's up to you.
Is there anything else about Bridgeport you'd like to mention? Anything you remember? Anything else?
Bridgeport. I remember going to the libraries all the time when I was young. There is another thing that a lot of the children can do today if they want to. Go to the libraries. They're open. Go in there if you have nothing to do. Read your books. Get the knowledge into your head. Another thing that bothers me so much is the emphasis on sports day. Now, I'm a man who loves sports myself. And I cannot see anybody using sports more or less just to try to go to college because they're 7 feet tall or... And then they go out there for $1 million a year, they quit college before time because they say it's a hardship case. If they're a hardship case, how do you ever get through the first 2 or 3 years? So that to me is just a simple an excuse. They use that as a stepping stone for $1 million, which I have no argument against. But as far as the children are concerned, they have to look up to somebody. If they look up somebody here and seen this man going through school and quitting after 3 years of college to get $1 million for playing basketball, and that man had nothing to show after that, no education, and after his years of playing basketball or football or anything else are finished, he wasn't going to do it. Just sit back and do nothing because he had nothing else to go into because he's only 45 years old or 40 years old, and he's already been beaten down to where he can't get a job anymore. So he's going to live off of that money. In the meantime, he doesn't have any money to live on because it's all going for taxes or for anything else. And it bothers me on that basis. What else is there? As far as the, of course, I can only talk about Bridgeport. I remember going down through, from Bridgeport, going up to New Haven a lot of time for our beats up there and going along the Post Road, which was only a one road street more or less, playing a lot down the green over on Boston Green. And I lived on Ogden Street at one time. And everything was well taken care of. They used to have signs up there. There was one little building there that had a sign saying that George Washington slept here in some such a time, years and years ago. I went by the other day, I didn't see the sign anymore. What happened to the sign, I don't know. That was something to be proud of. You had a heritage to look back on. And that's all gone. So it seems to me instead of people progressing forward, they're more or less turning themselves back down than use an excuse that they need help. You don't need help. You can do it yourself if you try. People are talking about the fact of lack of jobs. I look in the paper every day. I'm retired. All right, let's say they should have hired somebody to retire to take my place after I retired. And so many other retirees that are now leaving. But you look in the paper every day, there's thousands upon thousands of jobs all over, if you bother to take them. They use an excuse, well, I can't get a job that's comparable to the money I was making before. If you want a job bad enough and you're proud of yourself, you will work for the little money you get, and then in the meantime, look for something better. And during the Depression, they should do now what they did then. Get the people a bucket, the ones who are on welfare. Give them a little garbage can on wheels with a push broom. At least they would keep the streets as a city clean. Make it something to look for when people ride through. They would say, boy, look at this clean city. It's something to be proud of. Instead of sitting back and saying, well, the unions more or less would fight against it, saying the fact that, well, no, they're taking our jobs away from us. If they're taking away the jobs away from you, then why aren't you doing it? You know, that to me is an excuse. I'm a union man. I always have been. But I cannot see being so biased in one respect that you cannot see both sides of the question. In order for you to have a job, somebody's got to pay you. In order for that person to pay you, he's got to make some money. If he doesn't make money, he can't live on it. He can't enough to support you as well as his business. So he's going to have to either drop the business or let you go. So it's all a combination of meeting together and cooperating. And if you can't do it, and you only see one side of the coin, then God help us all. That's all. And what else can I say? That's about it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.